ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अजस्य जन्मोत्पथा नशनाय खरमाने अकर्तुर ग्रहणाय पुंसं नानो अन्यथा को अर्हति देहा योगं परो गुणानां उत परमा तन्त्रम् अजस्य जन्मोपधनाशनाय कर्मण्यकर्तुर्ग्रहणाय पुंसम् नन्द्वन्यथा कोर्हति देहयोगम् परो गुणानाम् उत कर्मतन्त्रम् अजस्य जन्मोत्पदनाशनाय कर्मण्यकर्तुर्ग्रहणाय पुंसम् नन्वान्यथा कोर्हति देहयोगम् परो गुणानाम् उत कर्मतन्त्रम् अजस्य जन्मोत्पदनाशनाय कर्मण्यकर्तुर्ग्रहणाय पुंसम् नन्वन्यथा कोर्हति देहयोगम् परो गुणानाम् उत कर्मतन्त्रम् अजस्य of the unborn janma appearance utpatha nashanaya for the sake of annihilating the upstarts karmani works akartu of one who has nothing to do Grahanaya, to take up. Pumsam, of all persons. Nanu anyata, otherwise. Kaha, who? Arhati, may deserve. Deha yogam, contact of the body. Para, transcendental. Gunanam, of the three modes of nature. Uta, what to speak of. Karmatantram, the law of action and reaction. Translation. The appearance of the Lord is manifested for the annihilation of the upstarts. His activities are transcendental and are enacted for the understanding of all persons. Otherwise, since the Lord is transcendental to all material modes, what purpose could he serve by coming to earth? Purport. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Brahma Samhita 5.1. The form of the Lord is eternal, blissful, and all-knowing. His so-called birth is therefore an appearance only, like the birth of the sun on the horizon. His birth does not, like that of the living entities, take place under the influence of material nature and the bondage of the reactions of past deeds. His works and activities are independent pastimes and are not subject to the reactions of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita 4.14, it is said, Namam karmani limpanti, name karma phale spriha, iti mam yo bijanati karmabhir nasa bhadyate. The law of karma enacted by the Supreme Lord for the living entities cannot be applicable to him. Nor has the Lord any desire to improve himself by activities like those of ordinary living beings. Ordinary living beings work for the improvement of their conditional lives. But the Lord is already full of all opulence, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Why should he desire improvement? No one can excel him in any opulence, and therefore the desire for improvement is absolutely useless for him. One should always discriminate between the activities of the Lord and those of ordinary living beings. Thus one may come to the right conclusion regarding the Lord's transcendental position. One who can come to the conclusion of the Lord's transcendence can become a devotee of the Lord and can at once be freed from all reactions of past deeds. It is said, Karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti vajam. The Lord minimizes or nullifies the reactionary influence of the Lord, devotee's past deeds. Brahma Samhita 5.54. The activities of the Lord are to be accepted and relished by all living entities. His activities are to attract the ordinary man towards the Lord. The Lord always acts in favor of the devotees, and therefore ordinary men who are fruit of actors or seekers of salvation may be attracted to the Lord when he acts as protector of the devotees. The fruit of actors can attain their goals by devotional service, and the salvationists can also attain their goal in life by devotional service to the Lord. The devotees do not want the fruit of results of their work, nor do they want any kind of salvation. They relish the glorious superhuman activities of the Lord, such as his lifting Govardhan Hill and his killing the demon Putana in infancy. His activities are enacted to attract all kinds of men, karmis, jnanis, and bhaktas. Because he is transcendental to all laws of karma, there is no possibility of his accepting a form of maya as is forced on the ordinary living entities who are bound by the actions and reactions of their own deeds. The secondary purpose of his appearance is to annihilate the upstart asuras and to stop the nonsense of atheistic propaganda by less intelligent persons. By the Lord's causeless mercy, the asuras who are killed personally by the personality of Godhead get salvation. The meaningful appearance of the Lord is always distinct from ordinary birth. Even the pure devotees have no connection with the material body, and certainly the Lord, who appears as he is, in his Satchidananda form, is not limited by a material form. So here Vidura is bringing out the point that the Lord is transcendental. The Lord is not affected by the modes of nature, that his activities do not bind him in this world. So, yeah. Now, we see that he's working so-called within what we would call the material energy, right? It means in his pastimes in this material world. Then he's dealing with seemingly the same thing that we are, right? He's performing activities in the same place as the Pandavas, as Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, Karna. But he's transcendental, they're not. So one would then start, one would doubt then the actual meaning then of material. That we're saying the material activities of the living entities, but the Lord's functioning the same scenario and is transcendental. So then one can see from this that then there's something more behind just the action itself. It means every action will give a result, right? That's the way it's designed. If Krishna didn't want a result, then there'd be no need of pastimes, right? If you want no result, you perform no activity, you get, then nothing comes up. But the Lord wants a result, right? Means He interacts with His devotees, and He wants the result of that interaction, right? And that interaction is that love, right? So love, then, we would not necessarily take that as some tangible object that you can perceive within the modes of nature, or within, let's say, the gross elements. Right? Does that make sense? So the results Krishna is looking for are not opulence. As pointed out, he is already opulent, so he does not need to perform an activity to increase his opulence. His performance of activities is to increase the experience of the affection between himself and his devotees. Right? Right. So that would be the difference. So then, if that's what he's gaining, then what is it he's doing different? Because he is not acting because of the modes, he's completely independent. And he's using the modes, they act under his direction to perform results in the activities. But he is unaffected by these results because his only interest is in the affection between the devotees. Right? While others are interested in the gross result of increased opulence. Right? Whatever that may be. So it's different. Result will be there. This idea that there'll be no action, there'll be no result, doesn't exist, because the person is saying, I am doing nothing. I am sitting and I am meditating, right? But sitting and meditating is a state of existence. There is action going on, right? You had to prepare yourself for the meditation. You did the meditation. After the meditation, there was some conclusion. You got up, rolled up your mat, and put it away. Right? So a complete activity with preliminaries, the action itself and conclusion was performed. Right? So there's no such thing as there. Or you say, yes, I am, you know, merging into Brahman, but still, there's two. Right? There's always going to be your endeavor and the experience gained from it. Right? You're sitting there facing your little wall there and experiencing that of, you know, nothingness or oneness. But you're sitting there and that wall are two, I mean, you're sitting there and that experience are two different things. Right? So you can never get away from difference. It just doesn't happen. So, here then, the Lord, His interest is in the experience that's gained from the activity. Right? This is what's called anubhava. Anubhava means when you perform, means according to the natural relationship, the sthayibhava, that being under the inspiration of attraction and therefore need in vibhava, a activity is performed, right? The anubhava, the actions of devotional service and the experience of it are then gained, right? So that's what's interesting to Krishna. So here then, the Lord then has nothing to gain other than that affection. So whether you're dealing in superior, whether you're dealing inferior, it doesn't matter. Right? Let's say you have two very wealthy persons. Extremely wealthy. So they interact with each other in their natural environment, in their house, which is all full of opulence. And they'll be tasting their natural relationship. Right? Now let us say they go out inside their house, and they go out in the street, and they're moving about there. Their relationship will remain the same. Right? The external environment will be less opulent than that, but their operation of this inferior environment still creates the same emotional result. Does that make sense? So the Lord can function within the spiritual world or within what we would call the material world and still get the same result of affection between Him and His devotees. Does that make sense? Okay. Now in here another point we see is the element of called pastimes. It's always called pastimes. You even mentioned here the fruit of actors. This is also an important thing. It's the actor means he does a very good job at performing his duties as an actor. He plays his part well. He says his lines well with the proper feeling, the appropriate actions, appropriate outfit at the appropriate time, and then everyone will say it's a very well-performed drama. So that's what's going on in the material world. People may accept that or not, but that's what's happening. All this action is going. The Lord's, all these different activities are going on. Now here, as Krishna pointed out to Arjuna, he has already killed everybody on the battlefield. Right? They've already been killed. And how they're going to be killed and all this and that, he's already arranged. Now he makes the point to Arjuna, if you want to get the credit for that, then you go out there and do the action. Right? You'll be involved in the activity by which they are killed. This way you'll become the great hero of the battlefield. This makes some sense? So that means whatever there is already going on. Now it's just a matter of whether we want to take part in that and get the result, because result will come. But for Krishna, that result does not bind him. But for us, it does, because we function in that kind of currency. Right? We're looking for the opulence, we're looking for the external situations. So therefore, then it binds us. Another element that is being brought out is the element of the protection. It means the karmis, they're looking for the nice results. The jnanis are looking for that shelter of being freed from the material entanglement. Right? The karmis are looking for shelter in the entanglement, the jnanis being freed from that. Right? So the living entity, being dependent, has to feel sheltered. Right? You merge into the Brahman. Well, why would, it means if everybody's Brahman, it's all Brahman, why would you merge into the Brahman? Why the Brahman wouldn't merge into you? Right? Or vice versa. If it's all one, then you are the Brahman, then why are you merging in the Brahman? Right? So you can understand from this the underlying need of the living entity to take shelter somewhere. Does that make sense? So, then the Lord shows this by how He performs His wonderful pastimes and protects the devotees. So that's going to attract the karmis and the jnanis. Because shelter is what they're looking for. Right? So everyone can feel sheltered by surrendering to the Lord. Then he points out is that this element of establishing the religious principles, that's secondary to the Lord. Because even though that's the best environment, we see as he does that, create the environment, that's not actually what the Lord is looking for. That you have a very nice, peaceful, regulated, pious environment in which everybody is performing their activities properly, that's not what Krishna is looking for. Right? It's what are you going to do with it? You know what I'm saying? You have a house, it's very nicely set up, it has all facilities, everything is there, everything is properly maintained, there's nothing that won't work in the house, won't do their activity. But if you never do anything with those things, then What is there? That you can say, no, it's so, it would be so nice to have it. Would it? If you really think about it, in your mind, you're thinking it would be so nice to have a situation like that. Why? Because then, one, you can show it off to others and show what nice facilities you have, or, you know, get benefit from that side, or you can interact with those who are dear to you in that environment. But just to have it, but never use it, right, then would not be interesting, right? Even you say, no, but it's the security. But that security means you could use it and get those results, right? So we still come back to the same point. It's whether you're directly using it or indirectly, that in the future I could use it if I wanted, but in either way, activity will happen. Does that make sense? So that's why for Krishna, having a very nice, pious environment established is not very important. Right? He does that because it means his primary thing is the interaction with the devotees. But what environment are you going to, what is the best environment to interact with the devotees? Right? A very nice, pious environment in which everything works. Isn't it? So that makes the environment secondary to the relationship. If you think about it, when do relationships break down? Even though we're performing our duties perfectly, it's when the duties become more important than the relationship with the person one's performing the duties for. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you're so absorbed in making the perfect arrangements and taking care and doing everything that the actual interaction with those who you are creating that facility for, or that environment for, has been compromised. Right? Not necessarily by time. We're talking about quality. Does that make sense? So, that's the point. It's not time. It's quality, right? You see a friend you haven't seen for some time, maybe it's in the distance, there's no way you could interact, you only see them for a moment, but the interaction was really good, you feel satisfied. Right. Does that make sense? Or you could be with someone with all day, but you know, everyone's distracted doing this and that and so many other things. There's no satisfaction. At the end of the day, then you thought, well, what happened? What? There's nothing to remember. Does this make some sense? So, therefore, it's secondary, the establishment of these things. So, it is something that we do. Devotees do see that they establish a proper environment for themselves or those who they are dependent or who are dependent upon them to create this environment, but that's always secondary to the relationship. If it ever becomes primary, then it's always a trouble, right? I mean, in history, those moments where establishment of the religious principles becomes more important than the relationships, natural social relationships, they do stand out in history, right? People do remember them to this day, but not in the positive, right? Let us take the Spanish Inquisition, or let's say the Salem witch trials. No one remembers those in a good light. But what was going on there? There were persons who were very, in their own mind, very sincerely trying to create a very nice atmosphere in which other religious people could function without being disturbed by those who were considered, you know, inappropriate. That was the forefront of their consciousness. So one can't fault that. They simply had a charge and they wanted to see that those that were within the sphere of that charge were not disturbed by, you know, witches or whatever else it happened to be, irreligious or persons. But in doing that, there's no one that looks back on that era with, you know, happiness. Because in doing that, the very social fabric that they were supposed to be supporting became completely ignored. Does this make sense? Yeah? So we see that Krishna comes to annihilate the deity. He comes to establish religious principles, but that's secondary to the relationships that will be, engaged in that atmosphere. Does that make sense? So that means the process of establishing the religious principles also has to be in an environment friendly to proper social interaction. Right? So, because at no stage do we see that Krishna just, oh, 1 minute, let's put it all aside, all this rasa business, and let's just, you know, establish religious principles. Then when it's all established, then we can enjoy the rasa again. No. From beginning to end, his establishment of the religious principles was done through the medium of proper rasa. Does that make sense? Unfortunately, this throws out the American hat theory. You know, you have two great friends, and then you have a meeting, they rip each other to shreds, and then afterwards they say, oh, it was just the hat I had to wear. So we can understand that these are, you know, natural subhuman values of persons who don't actually know what human life is. Because Krishna somehow or another killed 640 million people without breaking any rasa anywhere. Right? That's the example. So we know that we don't necessarily start from that point, but we should be confident that this is the example and these other situations may be useful, but there's no reason that one can ever break down the natural social relationships between people. God doesn't do it. That means no one else has the right. You may think so. One may come up with all kinds of rationalizations, but that's what's called nirvishesh shunyavad, that Prabhupada came to save us from. Right? So Krishna is very careful here that the pastimes always go on. Right? He's always very, very careful because that is actually what's going on. We take ourselves too seriously, but at the same time don't take ourselves seriously at all. We're the soul. We're servants of Krishna. That's what's real serious. But that we're in this position, we have this age, we have this influence, we have this knowledge, that's, we may take too seriously. Right? So we get it inverted, right? These things are the external. What he's establishing is proper environment, the varnashram, you know, the dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are going nicely in the material world. So those are all our positions, but that's secondary. Right? For Krishna, the real serious thing is, who are you and what are your relationships with him and the devotees? To Krishna, that's the real thing. So then, in this way, we can... How do you say? Yeah. Well, any questions or comments? Yes.
Hello, question. We went to study that from Vrindavan and we can get credit. Because let's say the body is distributing both from the very secure area and they have the hands in the foot. Have they not done that? Is it actually that that person went back that day?
Okay. If the devotee wasn't doing, I mean, let's say the example is given that the devotee doesn't distribute the book, he's in some strange place and out of the way place, and he gives somebody a book. So would that person have gotten that book anyway in the same day? Not necessarily in the same day, but they would have gotten the book. Just like you see, the devotee gave someone a book and they looked at the book and the first garbage can they saw, they tossed it in.
then someone else came along and happened to look in the garbage can for whatever reason we don't not necessarily we worry about. They see the book, they pull out the book, they read it, and they become the devotee. See, there's a balance that is to be gained here. It's a very subtle point here. That, see, in the beginning it's fairly simple because we're dealing with just the principles. Then those take up all of our focus. So body, mind, and words are fully engaged in the Lord's service. But with time, we become adjusted to those, and, you know, because of the material influence, we tend to even deal with transcendence in a way like material things, that they have less importance or less influence with time. Right? So then, subtleties of our life then start to come up and take prominence, where the principle may be clouded. So here is that in the beginning we would be distributing the book because it's the order of the acharyas, it is what's pleasing to Guru Krishna and the sadhu, the devotees, the distribution of the knowledge, all those elements. And in the beginning, because we're not very good at it, we very easily see how it's just the Lord's pastime. But with time, as we become good at it, we learn, okay, you can just see somebody, and before they even get there, you know what lines you can use, what kind of attitude they have, even probably how much you can get from them, what kind of book they'll take, how many books they'll take. Then, sometimes we start to then think, I'm doing this. So then the Shastra means the acharyas then point out these very subtle points that it's not the activity that's the devotional service. Right? It's the ritual, because Krishna says, I am the ritual. That means anything that you do, it all has a ritual. It's Krishna. That's why it works. But then it's the desire to be involved in that ritual to please Krishna that is the devotion. Does that make sense? But we'll tend to see the ritual as prominent and not the other, because in the beginning, when we sincerely are dealing with the book distribution, you're not really seeing the external. It's all just the Lord's mercy and this and that, and that's actually the active principle in the book distribution. But with time, as we become comfortable in it, then we're comfortable with our part in the pastime. So then, if we become proud, I mean, the person's on the stage, and, you know, they do a great job of being the actor, then if they start off stage acting as if they're the actor, and saying, I am that person, everyone else would kind of go, kind of, you know, start to, at lunchtime, move down, you know, on the bench, or go sit at another table. So, but the same thing, but that's obvious because everybody will say that's a drama. But in our quote-unquote real life, it's also a drama. But it's so well arranged by the Lord that no one thinks it is. So because everybody's doing it, we all accept it. Right? Means if everyone in a particular community does something that's strange, no one thinks it's strange. It's normal. Does that make sense? So therefore, becoming expert at something and then becoming, how you say, confident in that or even proud in that is natural. That's what happens. But in doing that, it does affect the quality. A proud actor is never a good actor. Like that. Even the proudest actor, when they're noted, are those moments when they forget their pride and just play the part perfectly. Like that. So even when you have a good actor, there are moments when it's great and moments when it's not. Even though their acting may have been way better than someone else's technically, but it's the attitude that actually makes the acting.
Right? That's the point. So in here then Acharyas make this point to split the two. So now this then brings us to another point, is that the Lord's already arranging all these things. His energies are interacting with himself. The Lord has unlimited energies, so as universal form, they're all interacting with themselves. So then we can decide to go and get on that. We can become part of that. Because it said here, Arjuna could have sat out the battle. People would have gotten killed anyway, he would have got no credit. Or he could take part in the battle, they would have gotten killed, he would have got the credit. Right? So that's also just the Lord waits what's the right time, right place, and makes it happen so we get the best result. Right? It means he could have killed all those persons off, but he would have got the credit. So he lets it all happen at the Battle of Kurukshetra, and then Arjuna gets the credit. Does that make sense? So now in here, then we can also understand getting the credit isn't actually what's pleasing to Krishna, right? For himself. The only thing that's interesting in getting credit is the rasa that will be obtained by doing that. Right? If Krishna gets the credit, that means somebody's giving him the credit. So it's the interaction of giving the credit that's important, not getting the credit. Because he doesn't need to get the credit, he's doing everything anyway. Does that make sense? So it's the interaction that's important. So for Krishna, it's the important is the interaction of the devotee with Krishna, knowing that he's just taking part, and as Krishna is actually distributing the books and that. But Krishna wants to do it through somebody. Krishna does things by pastime. He doesn't do it just by mystic. He just thinks that it suddenly sits there. Right? There's a process how it comes to be sitting there. Right? Govardhan Hill could have just floated. I mean, he could have stopped the rain before that. He could have just, made Indra disappear and there would be no, rain. I mean, any of these things. But the process of going there, walking up to the hill, picking it up, holding it up, because pastime is what's important to Krishna. So the activity is what's important. And in the activity, the exchange between the members that are involved in the activity, and that exchange will create an experience. Does that make sense? Because the experience of the inaction is less than the action. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you have, like we mentioned before, you have stuff, you have an environment, it's nice, but until that environment's engaged, the experience is not dynamic. Right? And let us say the experience is dynamic by action, and you note that, and you say, this is great, or, I really appreciate this, or something. So there is a moment where a result is gotten, and you note that. How long does that last? Right? The dynamic experience of it's very short and it drops off. But if action is going on, then that feeling is extended as long as the action is there. Does that make sense? Because Krishna can sit around, he doesn't need anybody. But that experience is nice, but it's not as good as when he interacts with others. Does that make sense? So he is rasa, so in other words, manifesting that then will give more taste. Does that make sense? So then the devotee then feeling how Krishna is allowing him to distribute these books and how he's able to take part, that gives Krishna pleasure. Then having distributed those books or taken part in that activity, other devotees recognizing that and appreciating that devotee, that brings Krishna pleasure. Right? And then whatever inspiration comes from that, then the person's, by that nice interaction that they've met a nice person, they got a nice book, and that relationship Does that make sense? So these are actually what Krishna is looking at. That the book was distributed, that's important, and we put a lot of emphasis on that because of, one is the need just to expand the movement, but two, it's a language that a culture that is so externally based on the, how you say, significant gain of numbers, position, facility, stuff that you can count, then how else would you engage such people? You know what I'm saying? So that was Prabhupada's point, is if, you know, these Westerners don't do something big here in Mayapur, what's the use? Because they just think of things big. They're going to do that anyway, so do it for Krishna. So that's that is therefore the medium in that environment. It could be another medium. It doesn't matter the medium, but there's nothing wrong with that medium. That's the point. So that's what's being used there. Great. But it's actually, the point is it's a medium because it's a drama. Does that count? Okay. So, if somebody that you really wish to get a book, though you're not able to give it to, do they get benefit? Yes. Means just by the well-wishing of the devotees, someone gets benefit. Like that. That's important. That. See, we put it so much on the activity that someone does, that's the only cause of their advancement. But it's also the well-wishing of others. Right? That's why in the system we see here is that let's mention this point, that they never felt bad towards Duryodhana and the others. Right? The devotee. Because they will be benefited. Because it's only by being benefited that they will give up these. Right? Someone's behaving badly and acting in an obnoxious way or inappropriate way. But the only way they'll get beyond that is through spiritual advancement. So by the devotees having that interest for them, they will advance. So having ill will towards people actually is not beneficial for yourself and is not beneficial for the other person. It has no benefit on any platform. Right? Well, it might feel good for yourself that you feel bad towards them because they've done something wrong. That way you can feel that I don't do those things wrong, therefore I'm better situated, so my faith remains strong. That's okay in the neophyte position. But one can never at any point consider that advanced. And no, there's no consideration that ever could be. Because the madhyama, one of the symptoms, is that in these situations, they don't feel bad. They may be affected by it, but they know that the other person's only an instrument. It's not actually them. Right? Will that person get at some point? Yes, by devotee desires that they get benefit, the Lord will arrange it. You know, when, how, but it will happen. You know, yes. Oh, okay.
And I never thought until she left the body that after I thought, oh my gosh, she's doing service every day. She's absolutely living every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think until she left the body
that
actually I should do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a practical.
Yeah. Okay. Could you all hear? No. What she was saying is that there was an old handmade apron by her, made by mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yes, a traditional outfit. She made it. So then Mataji took it and made it into a cover for the Bhagavatam. It's made out of wool, so it's pure. So only after then, you know, on this point that one gets benefit by that well-wishing, it was only after then she had died that she noted that she was thinking, well, how she'll get spiritual benefit, but she realized that every day she gets benefit because the cloth that she made is, you know, doing service for the Bhagavatam, like that. So that's the point. Okay, so then we'll end here, and then we'll continue with questions after 5 minutes, and Kuntiya Prabhu has some announcement to make here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki.
Andrew Shankar will have a workshop on internet preaching, how to use the internet, especially to get new contacts and cultivate them, especially through Skype. And it will be at 10:30 this morning. And room 117 of the long building. It's room 117 in the office of the Congregational Development Ministry. And it will be presented by my wife, Shivara Govinda Dasi. Everybody is invited, and it's free. Hare Krishna.
Someday at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, we won't make any generally any appointments.
So then for this week, if it happens, say, like I can tell him on this earlier day, 10 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Okay.
So that'll be kind of like the formal time for that. Okay. Hello, Mr. Baghi. How is Mr. Baghi?
Surviving with your world.
Yeah?
Yeah. Back. That'll be gone. Back. Gone.
How long will you stay now?
I stay here until April 15th. It's the birthday of my ride. And then,
okay. That's why you're here with your sister.
Yeah.
What's your sister?
Blonde girl.
Yeah, yeah. She's a devotee also?
She is aspiring.
Okay, good. It's crazy. Yeah. Well,
yeah. You stay there at the Gurukul?
Yeah.
Gurukul Maharaj.
I like that.
I want to ask a question. Do fathers can romantically initiate their sons?
Technically, but Jayavataka Maharaj had mentioned that he was more comfortable with it if somebody was, you know, a recognized guru like that. But technically, yes, they can. If they're brahminically initiated, yes. But that's only Brahma Gayatri. The other things they can't.
The Gayatri, that's all.
The Brahma Gayatri, yeah. But then the point is then that has to be chanted three times a day, and the kid has to basically have that brahminical culture. They don't have to be Brahmins. They can be Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. But they have to have that brahminical culture, you know, like that. So that's the main thing. So they have to be able to maintain it, because it is a serious thing, because by doing that, you will take on their karma. You know, until such time as the, you know, Bhikshu Guru then initiates them into the other things, then it will go to him. Before that, it goes to you. Some question or something? Yes, sir. Why does he choose the instruments? I can understand why does he choose the instruments, but what's the purpose behind the question? You know what I'm saying? What doubt has come up that you would ask that question in that way? Over another, okay. Why, you felt that you've been slighted somewhere or something? Someone else got the job that you've wondered why him and not someone else. Why does Krishna choose one instrument over another in persons and interaction and all that kind of thing? Means because Krishna is looking at a bigger picture. Just like we see us here with the Pandavas, that it took quite a long time before the Battle of Kurukshetra was there. It means technically Duryodhana, for his behavior against the devotees, should have been removed a long time before. But he wasn't, just so that in doing this it could be done very efficiently and his devotees would get the credit. Right? Means it's a great thing that they've become emperors of the world. You know, they follow all their religious principles very nicely. They're good kings. I mean, you need example like that. So many are there. Yayati was a great king, you know, Puru, on and on. Harishchandra. So, but where we see is that someone is very outstanding, is in adversity, they can still maintain those good qualities. Does that make sense? Means someone who's trained and has good character, then in an ideal situation, you know, a stable ideal situation, maintains that ideal character, right? Still, that takes endeavor, because day in, day out, you always have to do the right thing. But it takes even more character if it's not an ideal situation, and even it's a disturbing situation, that you can maintain that character. So therefore we see even amongst kings that are great, Harishchandra, and that's just on the mundane platform, is considered special. Right? When Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Narad Muni about where are all the kings and which courts are they sitting in the universe, basically, only Harishchandra was sitting in Indra's court. Everybody else was in Yamaraj's court. Yamaraj meaning, you know, the heavenly aspect of it, right? Yamaraj has his heavenly court, or he, as a demigod, enjoys with others who are on that kind of level. Then he has this form where he goes to work, you know, and deals with the sinful souls like that. That's, you know, a less pleasant arrangement like that. So only Harishchandra was there. So we can see he stood out amongst all the other kings. Right? And the Pandavas, they stand out. It means Pandu, it mentions here earlier, he himself alone conquered the world. Right? The Pandavas went out, five of them, they conquered the world. He went alone. So Yudhishthira, because of his position, they had such respect that between the five brothers, then they could conquer the whole world undisputed. It wasn't disputed that there were people who didn't like it, but they had to agree to it. This was undisputed. So that's special, but because of the character. And his father was special because he alone conquered the world. Just him and his chariot, that's it. No one else. It wasn't like the others, you know. But that still, that was special. So then, all these things are there, but the Pandavas stand out more than Pandu. Right? Because in that adversity, how they responded. Does that make sense? So then, how Krishna arranges things and does things, it's only to bring one closer to Him. Right? The taste of that interaction, the taste of that endeavor, and the taste of trying. Right, just like we see that Mother Jashoda and Nanda Baba get great pleasure in seeing Krishna trying to do things. You know, bring a big pot. He can't do it, so he just stands there and waves his hands to move the pot. He can't do it, but, you know, that endeavor's made. Then we see, so in the same way as the living entity trying to, making that endeavor to be Krishna conscious, that pleases Krishna. So now, why he picks a particular person or not as the instrument over another, there's some bigger plan and you just have to wait and see. If it doesn't make sense now, don't get disturbed, just wait. You continue doing your services, you continue on your activities. Right? And then it will become obvious with time. Does that make sense? Like that. So, just like I was wondering, yeah, there was someone who was not at all a good manager. I mean, absolutely, probably you could categorize him as one of our worst managers in our movement. But no matter what position of management came up within the movement, in the way of a committee or something, they were on it. And with all blessings of everyone around it, even though every committee they were ever on disastrously failed. You know? So for years I was always wondering, how does this person get this position? You know, because I was wondering like that. And then one day I was looking, I noted, and then I've noted since then for years, that in the kirtan, you know, when they're in the kirtan, they're so absorbed in that kirtan. Completely oblivious to everything and just completely, you know, just very happy and just absorbed in that chanting and dancing. Not in, you know, that kind of way that anybody would notice. That's why I didn't notice it for years. But just one day I happened to notice, you know, by Krishna's grace. Then I could see it's just they're very sincere as a devotee, and this is how they identify themselves, that they are in this such a person. And so because of that sincerity, body, mind, and words is engaged in Krishna's service. So this is how they're fully engaged. Because that's how they identify. If they would pick another identity, then, you know, things might go better in so many ways. But ultimately, the whole point is how you're absorbed in Krishna's service. That's the real thing that matters to Krishna. Because the opulence doesn't matter to Krishna. It's a symptom of how hard you try, because activity gives result. Result means opulence. Right? But really, Krishna's not interested in the opulence because it's his anyway. So it's the endeavor. Does it make some sense? So you just have to wait and then you see. But the main thing is the person would be fully absorbed. Either that will be there, or it will prove to them that they're not that. It will either make them fully absorbed, or by doing that, then they will understand, well, actually, this is not what I should do. Right? I remember seeing someone who thought they should be a teacher, and they were always talking about it for years and years and years and years. Everybody basically knew they were a business person, but they had a great attraction to education. So then, somehow or another, it was encouraged, okay, then since you're not sure what options you should take, because their first option was education. And their last education was business. You know, it wasn't the predominant. So then it was arranged that they take up teaching, you know, fully. So for 6 weeks they just fully went in there and were involved in teaching. And they did a very good job like that. To this day, I've probably not seen that. Oh, no, I have seen, but let's say in the particular way, they were such an organized ashram teacher. Everything was perfect. They took just a plain-looking place and made it look nice. Everybody, it's like down to the second the schedule worked and everything. But after 6 weeks, then the person, even though they did a perfect job, understood, no, I'm a businessman. I'm not a teacher. And then they went off and started themselves a business, and they're doing quite successfully. You know, it's gone in like 2 years from being a local business to an international business. Right? So, therefore, you have all these elements. It will either fully engage the person, or it will allow them to understand something so they can be fully engaged. But the point is Krishna wants you to be fully engaged. Maybe someone else is more qualified, but would they be fully engaged? Just like this, if you have two persons, one who's more qualified, but being engaged in it, he might be thinking of other things and not really making a dynamic effort. You know, he'd be giving, let's say, even if he did 60%, his 60% would be better than the other person's 100%, who's less qualified. But Krishna, that 100% endeavor is what's important, not the 60% result. Does that make sense? Because results are already his. It's going to happen anyway when he wants it to happen. Right? You know, when it's supposed to happen, it'll happen. Miraculously. How? No one knows, but it happens. Right? So the point is that we make that endeavor, because then we're absorbed. Body, mind, words are absorbed. Is that okay? Do you think you can get me? Or is it you got picked and you wonder why not someone else? I was thinking the other way. Why him, not me? There's no why me, not him. Okay. Yes. Oh, okay. We'll get back.
Mm-hmm. And he just thinks, I have to do this for Krishna. And he doesn't actually ask for anything. He probably made that statement on purpose. I don't know the verse of that. But how does that work at our unified level when we start thinking, now it's all up to me? When does that transition kick in?
Okay, could you all hear? Yeah? Okay, so basically you're looking at this where the devotee is independent, means it's a maturity in the relationship, actually. It's not that they become independent in the work, because the ability, the facility, everything's created by Krishna anyway. But in the one is that I want to do this activity, so it's only by your blessings I can do it. So that's there, but that's one relationship. But you see there, it's kind of like, you have the element of the master and servant. But then there's the element of the affection between the master and servants. Then one knows what one should do and just does it to please. In other words, once you're adjusted with it, this is what's called Shravana Dasa. Means where the stage at which you, Varna Dasa, where you become adjusted with your service, your position. Right? So it functions both on the transcendental platform and on the material platform. So when you become adjusted to the particular skills required for the duties you're performing, then the Smarana Dasa is not on the platform of, it becomes more on the platform of the relationship to please. Does that make sense? Because the activity itself becomes habit. So in that way you would say they're independent. Technically they're not independent, because still the Lord is arranging it, but they're able to do so. It's not that he never thinks, I don't need the Lord or don't have to turn to the Lord. He's so absorbed in trying to do it right for the Lord, because he can do the activity, that it's the other one doesn't come up. It's not that it's not so much that he doesn't need that. He doesn't think about that. Does that make sense? It's a slight subtle difference. So that means then so the neophyte could. He's so absorbed in his service and wants to please Krishna by doing it, and he has become quite expert in it by practice, that they can come to that platform like that. So it's not the devotional system is there, that is so perfect that whatever one's position, whatever one's advancement, one can function on that topmost platform. The hierarchical delineation of it and the very strong statements that are made about the different positions are only there to get rid of pride. Right? Because we see is that you had Hanuman, who we know his greatness as a devotee and his position and all that. And then we have these, in one rendition the squirrel, in another rendition the spider. Other than that pastime, we never hear of that squirrel or spider again. But Krishna didn't see the difference, because that absorption was complete. Now Hanuman's absorption is always going to be there, that which makes him special. And the spider or squirrel, it may have been only for that moment. But still at that moment, Krishna doesn't make the distinction. So that's to not sound, use a dog-eared term, but the beauty of the devotional service is that it's, anyone can get the best results from it at any time, in any place. It's not in any way under the influence of conditioning. We are, therefore we may or may not take full advantage, but the devotional service itself is not. So if at any moment we just completely absorb ourselves, we get the full benefit. Is that okay? I didn't quite catch, because it was something about Yamaraj and then something about, that seemed like the previous question. It seemed like something connected to the previous question, how much benefit they get by desiring that.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's say he doesn't have like Yamaraj. Oh.
Oh, how conscious are they between there and Yamaraj's abode?
Oh.
Do they ever think like that? I don't know. There's a joke that there was. Won't be seen inappropriate. There was one very miserly businessman, extremely miserly. He never liked to do anything for anybody, really, because you know that effort and that time could have been used for his own profit. So one time, I think there was some sadhu came along and asked him where this prasad distribution was going on for these sadhus. So with his finger, he just kind of nonchalantly just pointed down that way. So then afterwards, after he died, then they brought him before Yamaraj. And then Yamaraj, looking through his papers, you know, I say Chitragupta's report did not get a good report. But he said, so therefore you're going to spend this much, you know, you're going to be in hell like this, but your finger, just your one index finger, is going to be in heaven. And then the guy asked, oh, why is that? He said, even though your whole life was just, you know, absolutely improper, one time you had shown this sadhu where the food was being distributed. So for that pious activity, your finger will be in heaven. And then the guy said, wow, if I'd known that, I would have, you know, if my whole body, you know, showed him where the place was, you know, like that, you know, kind of. So they will immediately, I'm sure, as soon as the Yamadutas kind of come there, I mean, after the initial shock, and they're dragged out of their body, and they get the understanding of what's going on. These I think it's six-eyed dogs are barking and snarling and like that. Then I think they'd probably, from that time, start thinking, I wish I had. But generally, the whole idea is that most people, they will just think about piety. They won't think about impiety. They won't think necessarily about devotional service. Because even if they did say, I wish I had taken that book, if they'd known what devotional service was, it would be a different category, but they didn't. So that may be one of the things that come up, but it would be agyata sukriti in any case. But they would be benefited. Any time one means another, in any age, if one wants to do something nice, one is benefited. And in Kali Yuga, even if one thinks about doing things bad, one didn't do it, you won't get the reaction, but you know, it will pollute the consciousness. So that's the whole point, is they are conscious, you know, of what's going on and all that. So they're taken out of the, you know, their illusory kind of like state. But it's not that they don't have that, their conditioning of who is their identity. That will remain. Because that's why then they so easily fit back into those places when they, after, you know, serving their sentence, you know, their time. Could. It's one of those things they could, if they did. But most likely they would think, you know, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, done this to my little brother, and I should have listened to my mother, and I shouldn't have walked out on my father, and, you know, I shouldn't have done this with my wife or that with my business partner. You know, probably if they kept going and they got to, you know, yes, and I should have taken that Hare Krishna's book, then, you know, then at that point, then if they say Hare Krishna, then, you know, some service has been done, they're put in another category. Like that. But if they do, that's great. But that's why we should be out there and be nice, and so at least if they deal badly, they themselves won't feel bad. They themselves would feel bad because we're such nice people. But if they don't think we're nice people, then they don't generally think they're doing anything wrong and not dealing with us nicely. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that sometimes we may take some externals like age, position, like that, a little like What is the proper and healthy role of these externals like gaze, position, and this structure in order to evolve and facilitate the realization?
Okay. Question is, I mentioned before about the absorption in position and age and all the things that are taken by as positions of respect and authority. So what's the healthy way of looking at them so that we don't overly go? Means that to have relationships, then there means to have interaction between one living entity and another, there has to be a relationship. So that relationship needs to be defined, because there's so many elements that are there that will flavor the relationship, right? So Krishna doesn't arrange that there's one kind of relationship. He could. It can just be him and Radharani. That is the Adi Rasa. But he expands that into all the others, because then it creates an environment in which that can be tasted. Does that make sense? So he and Radharani can just be together, but you know, it probably, you know, it can just be, exist like that, but then it might be nicer if there's a kunj. Kunj means there has to be trees. Trees means someone has to be taken care of, and someone has to make the arrangement. You know what I'm saying? So it just goes on and on and on. Then to do that, you light some lamps. What's in the lamps? Ghee. You need cows, right? They'll make nice things for them from the cows, from the other things. And that means there has to be people taking care of the cows. You know what I'm saying? So like this, you can just go on and on and on, so it expands. So therefore, all these different positions are there so that it creates an identity by which someone else can relate to you. So then, with that, then every relationship comes a responsibility. Right? So if the responsibility is being performed for the pleasure of Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas, then those positions of respect become useful, because then it creates a more, you know, it adds to the completeness of the social environment. Does that make sense? So one shouldn't take advantage of these positions. One should use them. Yeah, okay, that's one. That means we're talking about the most, the best outlook is that they're engaged. The other way you can look at it is, because we're conditioned, we do find happiness or satisfaction in functioning within these kind of positions and the facilities that we get from them. Does that make sense? So it's another way to connect your conditioned nature to Krishna. We're distracted by the conditioned nature, but now by this method we're able to engage the conditioned nature in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, but in both ways it comes back to, you know, the relationships like that. Because that's all the Vedas are talking about. Basically, you know, first of all, one's relationship with God and with God and the devotees. And that's in the spiritual world, then, you know, you have that. But in the material world, then that takes a little bit, you know, more knowledge of the devotional science. It means your technical knowledge, in that the rasa is not coming naturally, you know, spontaneously. So therefore, by following the rules and regulations, it will come by duties. Does that make sense? So one should not become proud of one's position or duties. It's simply what works for you. It's the best, in other words, it's the best situation to engage your particular needs, right? Someone needs to study, therefore the brahmachari ashram is the best. Because he becomes very knowledgeable, this, that, that's great, but he shouldn't become proud, because that's what he's supposed to be doing. Because if he becomes proud, he doesn't learn anymore, right? Pride means the cup is full, there's nothing more can be put inside. Does that make sense? So, or there's so many emotional needs, so those for Grihastha ashram is able to fulfill that. The extracting one from all those emotional needs, but within an environment that still is connected with those needs, then is the Vanaprastha ashram or the Sannyasa ashram, to fulfill the need of not being involved in the material environment. It's still a need. It's that, in other words, they can't function within attachment. They're only comfortable functioning in detachment. So it's still a need. They're saying, well, for the grihastha, they're not comfortable functioning in the environment of detachment. They're comfortable functioning within the environment of attachment. Well, the Vanaprastha is trying to bridge between the two, right? But you're starting from attachment, and then you're going over to that of detachment, right? Well, the brahmacharya is preparing himself for either of those. So he learns detachment because that's where you're trying to get to. But he learns all the proper attitudes and moods that's required, you know, the sense control, the sensitivity, the work ethic, the knowledge, the philosophy, in other words, understanding the science by which things work. Then he can either extract himself very easily or engage his attachments. Right? It means you need the same knowledge to do either. Does that make sense? So, like that, so then each of them then is able to fully engage themselves. Does that make sense? Right? Does that make sense? Anything more on that? Or no? Something else? Yes. What exactly makes wool pure? Because wool is hair, and hair does not absorb anything. Things sit on the outside of hair, but nothing goes into hair. Same with silk. Right? But like cotton, things actually go inside the threads. Like that. That's why it's less pure. The wool, nothing goes inside of it. So that's why it doesn't become contaminated. It means if you get something dirty on a corner of your wool chudder, that corner itself, where the thing is dirty, but the rest of it's not. So if you just wash that corner, it's clean. Right? Or if it just touches something that doesn't rub off on it, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? It means, let us say you slept on your bed and then you're dressing and you drop your clean dhoti on it. Technically your dhoti is dirty, but if you drop your wool chudder on it, it's not. Just because hair doesn't absorb it. That's the point. Okay. Anything else? Or? No? Okay, then we'll end here. Jai Ho, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanta Gaura.